The Evan Bray Show. The Round Table of Justice.
Well, welcome back to the show, Evan Bray. Great to have you here on a Monday morning. So every Monday, as you know, we at 10 o'clock will set aside a time to talk about something community safety related, could be justice related. And we've had a variety of topics and a variety of guests over the last couple of years. Today's topic to me is an interesting one. It's one that affects communities across Canada. I think it often goes under the radar, and that is fire investigation and arson investigation. We've got some experts joining us from the province who either work with or have worked with fire departments specializing in this sort of investigation, what they do, how they work, maybe even how community members can help with this. And this is not a small problem. We know across Canada, 94,000 incidents of arson over a one-decade period, and Saskatchewan's numbers, sadly, are not great. The province of Saskatchewan's average arson rate, if I look at the last decade, more than twice the national average when we look at a 10-year period. So again, like so many crime categories in our province, we hold the dubious distinction of being near the top of the list on a list that we don't want to be near the top of. And you think about the damage that it creates to communities, whether it's houses, whether it's businesses, lives lost. We report on that. Why does this matter? Well, it's not just a property crime. It does impact public safety, emergency services, insurance rates, rebuilding costs. There's a lot that play into this. So today's segment is going to be an exploration of fire investigation, arson investigation. And I don't think I've had a studio this full of people. I'm happy to welcome four guests on the show today. And I'm going to start with Yvonne Raymer, who is Assistant Chief in Public Relations, Community Risk Reduction with the Saskatoon Fire Department. Yvonne, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I've got Randy Ryba, who has been on this program before. He's recently retired from the Regina Fire and Protective Services as the Regina Fire Marshal. Randy. Good Thanks morning. For coming out of retirement for 1 hour. I appreciate it.
Good morning, Aaron.
Jason Scriver, retired Regina Fire and Protective Services fire investigator, currently working for 251 Forensic Fire Investigations. Jason, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And finally, Greg Litvani, who is the owner of 251 Forensic Fire Investigations based out of Yorkton. Greg.
Good morning, Evan.
Thank you very much for being here. So let's start with an arson investigator. It's really a fire investigator, right? Jason, maybe I'll start with you. Just pull that mic a little bit closer sure. to you there. What is this basic training done? All firefighters receive this level of fire investigation training?
No, they don't. So there is specialized training that you do need to take and get your certifications. It definitely does help to be a firefighter. We were all firefighters at one time. Right. I was with Balgonie Fire Department for a number of years when I lived out there, and it kind of led me into this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So obviously you go through training to become a firefighter, Randy, and then some people within the occupation gravitate to fire investigative work, or how does that work?
That's correct, Evan. Many firefighters have a thirst to learn more. Some go into the code compliance piece, some go into the fire investigation piece, but you have to have certification. The knowledge and the depth of knowledge is quite intense, and without that background and training, it would be impossible to do cause, origin, and circumstance. So, yes.
So, Yvonne, if you look at your fire service in Saskatoon, how many what I'll call fire investigators do you have on staff?
That's a great question. It's somewhere between 6 and 8 right now. We've had a bit of attrition and some promotions. The sweet number I would say for us is 8, just so you don't get burnout, because they're on standby, because some of the investigations can be quite lengthy, and you're still, of course, a fire inspector on top of being a fire investigator.
So, that number is actually small, Yvonne. That's a smaller number than I would have expected, because I'm guessing, what have you got, 250, 300 firefighters?
We do, but it's actually the fire inspectors who are our fire investigators. So we have 12 fire inspectors, and don't quote me, I believe 8 active fire investigators on the schedule right now. You're right, though, it is a small number, but it also allows them enough experience. So the one thing you want with a fire investigator is that it's not so far in between your fire investigations that, in fact, you lose your skill set. So I'm speaking from when I was a fire investigator. I think it's really important that actually you stay very active on those skills and you stay sharp and following the process.
Greg, I want to bring you into the conversation. You were a longtime firefighter in Yorkton. Now you do, you're the owner of this private business. So it's safe to say every fire is investigated to determine what the cause of the fire is. Is that correct?
Pretty accurate, Evan. Most insurance companies, that's our biggest clients, have what they call a quantum or a dollar value. So if it hits their dollar value, they want to know who's responsible for that fire, whether it's a person, whether it's an appliance, whether it's, you know, an electrical contractor or a plumbing contractor that maybe didn't do their job properly. Once it hits that dollar value, they call somebody like our company in to come in and give them the reason why that fire started.
Is it that you always come to and find the reason behind the fire? Jason's laughing at me asking that question. Greg, I'm asking you, though.
No, we can't always come up with the cause of the fire, depending on the type of damage, the amount of damage. Out in the rural areas, when we go and it's literally just a hole in the ground and a foundation, mm-hmm. by and large, we have to classify that fire as undetermined. So no, we can't always right. come up with a cause.
So I'm going to put you on the hot seat there, Randy, because I wonder how many undetermined fires result, and you don't have to give me the exact stats, but anecdotally, are you able to determine cause more often than not?
More often than not, Evan, ballparkish 85% of the fires can be determined. As Greg says, when I was a provincial investigator, I was all over this province from end to end to end. When you do a remote fire that it's a smoldering basement, you have to rely on witness statements, maybe videos, information, other information. Sometimes there's just not enough debris left to determine causation. Guessing is not an option at all. Guessing could put somebody in peril. Like you say, well, it's the coffee maker. But you're really not sure.
Right.
You can't say it's the coffee maker if you don't have enough conclusive evidence it was the failure mechanism. Then the coffee maker company gets sued or subrogated against. So you have to be sure. If you're not sure, as I teach investigation for many, many years as well, if you can't prove it, you can't say it.
Right. So I'm curious to know, can the investigation start, Jason, while the blaze is happening? Or is it literally, once the fire is out, the flames are extinguished, that's when the investigation starts? Are there steps during the early parts of a fire?
Oh, definitely. And when I worked for Regina Fire and Protective Services, part of my job was I would get called to those active fire scenes. And so what I would do is gather some information from the firefighters, what's going on, how many structures may be involved, any witnesses to that fire, interview them. Get some preliminary information, and then secure the scene. We'd also talk to the police, start exchanging information. I would send an email up the chain to the deputy chief and the fire chief in Regina, and then it would go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we're going to take our first break. We're up against our first break. I think back to basic recruit training for me in police college. We had a very small segment on arsons. And the one thing that always stood out for me is they said, as a police officer, one of the first things you should do, you're not there to put the fire out, but you are there to basically preserve evidence. And that includes getting the name and identity of every single person at the scene because, and this has stuck in my mind for 30 years, arsonists like to watch their craft. There's a very good chance that one of that group of people standing out gawking at the fire might either have had something to do with it or know someone that did. So I want to find out if that's true or we were just told that line back in police college in 95. So again, I've got four great guests on this topic. I've got Yvonne Raymer from the Saskatoon Fire Department. I've got Randy Ryber, retired Regina Fire Marshal from Regina Fire and Protective Services. And then Jason Scriver and Greg Litvani, both from 251 Forensic Fire Investigations, both former firefighters and now doing work in the private sector when it comes to fire and arson investigation. We'll be right back on the Roundtable of Justice here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
Welcome back to the show. Today on the Roundtable of Justice, we are talking fire investigations, including those that lead to a charge of arson. I've got four great guests on the show today. Yvonne Raymer is Assistant Chief Public Relations and Community Risk Reduction with the Saskatoon Fire Department. I've got Randy Ryba joining me. He's a retired Regina Fire Marshal with Regina Fire and Protective Services. Jason Scriver, retired Regina Fire and Protective Services, now a fire investigator working for 251 Forensic Fire Investigations, which is owned by Greg Licvani, who is also here. 251 Forensic Fire Investigations, based out of Yorkton. All of my guests today joining me, number one in studio, all with fire experience and can speak to this. So Yvonne, maybe I'll come back to you. What sort of training is involved for the firefighters? They go through their basic firefighters training. They become a firefighter. What does the training look like if they're going to become a fire investigator? Do they need a certain amount of time on the job? What are the qualifications?
Yeah, so back in the day, we used to actually go through Brandon Fire College or Vermilion, but just recently, with an agreement with the province, we've actually been able to provide fire investigation training here at our own training grounds. So a lot of it is theory. You're looking at burn patterns. You're looking at 921, our NFPA guide for fire investigations and explosions, walking through that, everything from your hypothesis to how you start to finish the investigation to evidence retrieval, and then working with police. So there's an anomaly here in that we don't actually lay the criminal charge for arson. That's with police. So we work quite closely with Saskatoon Police Service. They're the WHO, and we are the cause and origin determination experts.
Right. So let's start walking through what an investigation looks like. Randy, maybe I'll start with you. Talk to me just generally speaking. You get the phone, your phone rings. At what point are you stepping in? Are you, Jason mentioned before the break, he's maybe going to the actual fire as the blaze is burning. Is that the case?
If the blaze is still burning, especially large structure, they burn a lot longer, such as the Gordon Block down on 12th a couple of years ago. We get there as soon as possible. Our investigators there are on call 24/7, 365. The sooner we get there, the more we can collect. When the fire is out and safe for us to enter, we have a lot of work even prior to entry. We have our interviewing. We don't want to rush to judgment here. Stand back, take a look around. There's no rush. Under the Fire Safety Act, we can hold that scene as long as is necessary to do our cause, origin, and circumstance. Once we're able to get in and determine the building is safe to enter, and sometimes it is not, I would have to bring in heavy equipment to either stabilize it or take part of it down so my investigators can get in safely. Mm-hmm. Then it's working from, as Yvonne said, there's a process and a protocol in the training aspect of what we do. We work from the least burnt area to the most. And by the way, explosion investigation is part of our duty of care as well through the Provincial Fire Safety Act. Although we don't have a lot of explosions, we do have them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either fire, which is the most prevalent, or explosion, but we work from least to most. To go to the proverbial hole in the floor, that's the last place you should be. It would give you an indicator something happened in that area, below, into the basement, or above. We want to work from the unburnt area to the burnt area, collect as much evidence as we can. We have a duty of care to take evidence and presented in a secure manner to the police or a forensic analysis lab in Edmonton to see if we did have an accelerant or whatever we're looking for.
So on, okay, let's go back to, I made this comment before the break. I remember being taught in police college, Greg, I'll come to you with this question, that the arsonist, the person who likes to strike the match in whatever form that they're doing it, they like to stand back and watch their work. They like to watch the blaze. They want to see the reaction to it. Is there any truth to that?
You bet. Quite often, as investigators, as we mentioned during the break, Jason mentioned, we'll actually photograph the entire crowd, everybody that's around there, and just see who stands out. We've had incidents in Yorkton where there was one individual that was at every fire. Mm-hmm. And seemed to be at every fire and would beat the fire truck to the fire. Turned out that individual was responsible for those fires and was identified by having recognition of him on these various scenes.
Talk to me about what you have learned through your training, your investigation about the psychology behind someone who starts fires.
Yeah, it all depends on what their motivation is. Sometimes it's a domestic dispute, sometimes it's financial, but there's always an underlying cause or a mental health issue that precipitates. If we don't catch those people, and all the fire departments in the province are great at juvenile fire setting programs, trying to catch those individuals when they're early and curb them from that behavior. But if they're not caught at a young age, it will transfer into adulthood.
Right. And which makes me think about some of the programs in Regina. I remember, Jason, there was lots of programs aimed at youth setting fires in garbage bins, in back alleys, you know, stating that obviously there's a danger to that. But I think the other part of it, and you correct me if I'm wrong, was trying to nip it in the bud before these 9-year-olds who are setting fires to garbage in a garbage bin move on to the garage next door or whatever.
Right, right. And yeah, we used to, if we found that a youth was involved in a fire setting incident, then we would try to engage with these people and get them and their parents. Of course, we need the parents' permission to have them participate in these programs, but yes, to try to get them into programs to show them what fire setting does, what it can do, and why they need to curb that behavior.
Is there a significant difference between an investigation, like let's say a house fire investigation, versus one in a back alley, a garbage fire, versus, you know, maybe a wildfire? We've certainly seen lots of those, and we know some of those were intentionally set. Jason, do they all have essentially kind of the same principles through the investigation?
Well, we're still trying to find cause, origin, and circumstance for every fire. Like Randy said, we have to report every fire to the province. We have a duty of care to do that. It doesn't matter what kind of fire we have within the city or within the province. They all need to be looked at. They all need to find out why did this fire start and how can we prevent fires from starting.
All right. We've got a number of questions coming in on the text line, and I always like to pass along some of the listener questions that come in as well. So we're up against our first break. But when we come back, one question, and maybe Yvonne, I'll set the stage for you. When we come back after the break, I'll ask you this question. But do arsonists have almost their signature or their calling card? Have you found through the years, and I know this used to be the way with, for example, graffiti investigations, certain perpetrators would have their tag that they would do. Do you find that with arson investigators? We'll talk about it. I'm chuckling at one of the techs on the line wanting to know if there's any shows or movies that are true to life of what an arson investigation. Smoke is a big one apparently right now on Apple TV. So I'll ask the question of my guest that. We're talking fire investigations, arson investigations today on the Roundtable of Justice. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
It's a good conversation today on the Roundtable of Justice. We are talking fire investigations and, of course, those that lead to an arson charge, potentially, in many cases, intentionally set fires. I've got a number of guests all joining me in studio today. Greg Litvani is the owner of 251 Forensic Fire Investigations in Yorkton and a former firefighter in Yorkton as well. Jason Scriver is a retired Regina Fire and Protective Services member, also working now as a fire investigator for 251 Forensic Fire. I've got Randy Ryba joining us, retired Regina Fire Marshal, and Yvonne Raymer, Assistant Chief from Saskatoon Fire Department, joining us. And Yvonne, before the break, I mentioned we know often criminals will have kind of their signature, if you will, something that can be traced back to them, a unique way they commit their crimes. Is that the case with arsonists? Have you seen that in your time?
Many times, actually. It's a great point in that some are one and done. It depends on their motivation, as we spoke about here, but there are some who it may be the way they set up the scene. They follow the same pattern. If it worked the first time, it'll work the third or fifth time. And then sometimes that's actually how you catch them. I can think of one group that I knew of about five or six that they were responsible for, but by the time we pulled in all the same patterns, by the time the police were done, once we determined who they were, the police interviewed them, they actually admitted to another 13 even on top. So, you know, it went stemming back 4 years in the works. So I think that's a great point that, yes, they will set it up sometimes. Same, if it worked once, they'll continue to do it again.
Randy, I'm sure you've seen that through your years.
Oh, certainly. The MO is the same.
MO is the method.
The method.
That's
correct. Some just can't help themselves to, maybe they want to be caught. Maybe they're taunting the authorities, trying to say, catch me if you can. But as Yvonne said, there are many people that will leave a common signature, and it's typically the way they set up.
Mm-hmm.
The situation, that's important to gather that information. There's been many case studies in the States where fire investigators were caught doing that, unfortunately, and caused the death of a number of people. It's important that the authorities having jurisdiction, being the fire department and the police department, work diligently to catch these people in the early stages. They'll start small, outbuildings, play structures. They get more bold the longer they are out on the loose. Then it becomes an occupied structure, it becomes a mercantile structure, it becomes a vehicle. The data shows that they will elevate their game until they're caught.
Which is very indicative, I think, of just criminals in general. You see, whether it's theft, whether it's assaults, often they start off small, and then if there's no intervention, then it grows. Greg, you were talking some interesting stuff during the break, just about almost signatures left at the scene. Can you talk a little bit about that you've seen in your career?
Yeah, in particular, since 2020, during the pandemic, there was a number of gang wars, basically, in the city of Regina, and rival gangs would break into each other's houses, steal things, assault people, and then light the structure on fire. And the way they did it was always the same. There was poured an liquid accelerant throughout the building, struck it, and they would always tag that building with their signature gang tag. So everybody who was out there knew which particular gang did that arson.
Right. And so did you see that yourself? Like, you would go to a fire and you would see... Can you give an example of where that might have happened?
Yeah, so the North Central area in the city of Regina is well known for fires. During those years, our company alone was doing between 4 and 7 house fires a week in the peak of that for those couple of summers. And what they would do is if the house was tagged NSK, it would be then tagged IM on top of the NSK, and there would be IM all over the place, Indian Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew it was, you know, the two rival gangs going at each other. And then even us in the private sector have collaboration with the Regina Police Service. And then we get educated on which gang taggings are which and which colors are which. Mm-hmm. So we know when we go into a neighborhood, you know, even for our own safety, what we're looking out for.
Right. Okay, Jason, I'm going to bring you back into the conversation because we were talking about gathering evidence.
Yeah.
You said it starts right with taking pictures or video of the crowd of people there, interviewing witnesses. What are some other ways in which evidence is gathered? I know in the break we were talking about the availability now of technology like doorbell cams.
Right. Yeah, doorbell cams have definitely helped a lot in that. One of the things I'll do is scan the neighborhood and see if anyone does have a doorbell cam, and if they will give me the footage, and it has helped a lot. I mean, personally, with Regina Fire especially. Other things, when we go in and conduct our investigation and we find where our point of origin is, if we do think there's an accelerant, we will take a sample of that and we will send that away to have it analyzed and just confirm that there was a hydrocarbon or some sort of accelerant used.
So how often is it that you find physical evidence at the scene? Like, I'm thinking of gas cans, anything that might be indicative of, you know, I'm thinking about like a Molotov cocktail thrown through the window. I remember going to a house where the fire started, but they were able to put it out and there was a bottle laying on the floor that had some burnt, you know, substance inside of it. Clearly, that's, you know, a rudimentary version of trying to start it. Is that pretty common at fires where the complete structure hasn't been destroyed?
Exactly. We will find whatever was in that house in a different state after the fire, but it's still in the house. So whether it's a gas can that melts down into a puddle, you know, even bodies, everybody thinks that they can get rid of a body, get rid of evidence by burning it. Doesn't happen.
Sadly, that happens. And I know we don't need to get into names, Randy, but you've investigated some of those cases through the years where essentially a fire is a homicide in disguise, someone trying to either hide a body that has been already murdered or it's a way to commit the crime.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, Evan, it is a fact of life in our type of work. I've done thousands of investigations over my career, probably 250 fatalities. Most fires are unintentional or what people call accidental, and people do perish in those. On your point, I have been involved in many fires that somebody's trying to get rid of the evidence. Like Jason says, it's always there, even if it's a human being. People are always there in whole or in part, and it's a cover-up. We found them in attics. We found them in basements where they've previously been deceased, and people think they can get rid of the crime scene by burning the building.
Yvonne, let's bring you back into the conversation. Yvonne Raymer is with the Saskatoon Fire Department as an assistant chief there. Can you talk about how technology has changed the way fire investigations unfold?
Well, one of the things that we're looking at is how can drones assist us here in Saskatoon? We're not there yet, but we're definitely getting closer where we could actually do 360 around the structures. You know, it's actually safer for the fire investigators as well. Maybe they don't have to get up in the aerial ladder. So drones are one thing. And when we talk about doorbell cameras, a lot of people take video. They'll have a video even before we arrive. So, you know, that's some of the technology that we'll utilize, looking on social media. And then as well, a lot of people have like home security, even in the alleys now, we're finding a lot of cameras set up. And then the police actually have great technology. So they're a good partner with us too, that if we think there's a piece of equipment, like even here, we've got the plane. We've used the plane sometimes to maybe look for a person of interest based on a report. So technologies, you know, we have to evolve with technology and use it to the best, as best of an asset to our benefit as we can.
Mm-hmm. In private industry, would it be the same, Greg?
Yeah, you bet. We utilize drones in our company. You get a great overall view of that scene. We don't have access all the time, especially in the rural areas, to a ladder truck or an aerial apparatus. So we use drone technologies. And like everybody has said, social media now is a great tool for us as investigators. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will post things on there unknowingly. We talked about it in one of the breaks, just bins. We know where a lot of our assignments are coming from. And sometimes we have a great view of one of the fires Jason recently did. He had a great view of that fire unfolding as it happened, prior to even going on scene. So that technology is fantastic.
Okay, we're going to take our last break. We've got four guests joining me in studio today: Yvonne Raymer, Randy Ryba, Jason Scriver, and Greg Litvani. We're talking about fire and arson investigations as we wrap up a couple more questions, including a couple from you. The big one I want to know is, are any of these TV shows or movies real to life? We had a brief conversation off air about the new Apple TV series Smoke, and it got a head shake from the three sitting in front of me. So we'll be back with your thoughts on that here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show, the Roundtable of Justice.
It's been a good discussion today on the Roundtable of Justice. Four great guests: Yvonne Raymer, Randy Ryba, Jason Scriver, and Greg Litvani, all firefighters that became fire investigators, some of them still working, some of them recently retired. A couple of these fellas working now in private industry. 251 Forensic Fire Investigations out of Yorkton, Saskatchewan, owned by Greg Ledvanny. So you work predominantly with four insurance companies. Would that be who your clients would be?
Correct. That would probably be about 90% of our clients. We do some work, legal opinions for law firms, and then on sometimes we represent the manufacturers on the opposite side of a file. So if one particular company was accused by another fire investigator or another insurance company that it was their product, they retain their own expert to review that documentation and then possible litigation.
Right. And I'm assuming you've talked about you do work all over Western Canada. If you were to come to Saskatoon, for example, to do a fire, you're a private company. How well do you work with the authorities like Saskatoon Fire Department?
Well, that's one of the benefits of having a 27-year career in the fire service in this province. We have great working relationships. When Randy was the fire marshal in Regina here, the fire marshals in Saskatoon, Brian Conway, David Faulkner, we have great working relationships with them. At times, there's a bit of a delay from when we get the call from the insurance company.
Right.
The fire department may have already done their investigation. At other times, we actually do it as a joint investigation. Mm-hmm. If that scene has been held and we can have been notified and are there on time, we'll actually do it as a joint investigation, and we work collaboratively with all fire departments.
Randy, where do you see things going? I'm going to ask you and Yvonne the same question. Yvonne, currently working as the assistant chief with Saskatoon Fire, but I'll start with you. Recently retired from, what were you, 40, how many years?
46 and a half.
46 years. That's a long career. But, you know, it continues to evolve. What do you see for the future of fire investigations?
It'll only get busier, Evan. As fire marshal, I chart stats continually. The rise in Regina and a couple of our high-risk band areas and the city as a whole have gone up 20, 24% annually over the last 8 or 10 years as far as more fires. The vast majority of fires are unintentional, caused accidental, a lot of folks say, but the incendiary fires are the ones that we can't prevent.
Mm-hmm.
We can't know what's in a criminal's mind. It is reckless, it's criminal, and it hurts people and worse. Preventable fires, when I was fire marshal, I put a bunch of communiques out annually on different themes. One thing the citizens of our city and this province can do to lessen the chance of somebody going down their alley is bring their bins in to a secure area, light up the back of their property, lock your back gate. That goes a long way.
I was going to say, those are basic kind of crime prevention through environmental design options that you're talking about. Yvonne, I want to bring you in. Thoughts on the future of fire investigation, arson investigation?
Yeah, I agree with what Randy is saying, you know, that crime of opportunity. We always tell people here, don't become a target. Do what you can to protect your property. You know, you can't always protect it. But I think a big thing that we're watching is technology. I think in order to stay sort of abreast of what could happen with arson fires, but as well, we do ask people, if you see somebody suspicious, don't sit on it. Actually report it. Even if the police don't go out, if they're reported and 2 hours later we see a fire, you can actually be a key piece of the investigation by just reporting people of interest that are acting mm-hmm. suspicious or maybe look like they're scouting your area, and then sort of know your neighborhood too. Like if we do have a rash of arson fires, we will actually communicate with the community association, not to put fear in anybody, but just for awareness to help be that proactive piece of the investigation.
Right. Jason, mm-hmm. are there any fire movies or shows that are true to life? You watch it and you go, that's exactly how it is.
No. And I think it would be kind of boring if we did, because it's very meticulous, the work we do.
Right.
But yeah, I just watched this one called Smoke, and yeah, it has nothing. It's not even close to what we do. So
there was a text here on the line from Dean saying, you know, you worry that these TV shows maybe are a way to incentivize or cause people to think about different ways to commit these crimes. That can be said for police shows as well. Is that something that you guys worry about?
Well, yeah, giving up some of our trade secrets right now kind of concerns me, but, you know, I'm hoping it's mostly law-abiding citizens
well,
listening.
For sure. And I mean, I think that's the benefit, is helping people understand how these investigations. By the way, Greg, 251 Forensic Fire Investigations online at where?
www.251fire.ca.
Okay. Well, this has been a good chat. Greg Litvani and Jason Scriber, both from 251 Forensic Fire Investigations. Thank you both for being here. Randy Riba, retired Regina Fire Marshal, 46 years. And I feel like they could throw you back into action today if they needed to.
They sure could.
Thank you for being here. And Yvonne Raymer with Saskatoon Fire Department. We appreciate you joining the conversation, Yvonne.
Thank you.
This has been the Roundtable of Justice here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.